next set of items, which are 268 through 273. So if you could read those, please, Carla.
268, approve the 11th amendment to the Central East Side Urban Renewal Plan to add plan area and projects, extend the duration of the plan, and increase the maximum indebtedness. 269, approve the termination of the Education Urban Renewal Area Plan. 270, adopt the Fourth Amendment to the North McAdam Urban Renewal Plan to add to the plan area, add projects, and extend the time frame of the plan. 271, approve the 11th Amendment to the Airport Way Urban Renewal Plan to reduce plan area by approximately 970.5 acres. 272, approve the Second Amendment to the Willamette Industrial Urban Renewal Plan to cease collections of tax increment. And 273, approve the Fourth Amendment to the amended and restated River District Urban Renewal Plan to reduce plan area by approximately 36.4 acres.
Thank you. And Patrick Quinton is here to respond to council questions and direction from the public hearing.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Hales. Good afternoon, commissioners. So what I have here is a quick presentation that responds to the range of issues that were brought up in testimony from our last hearing. So it's somewhat of a disjointed presentation. It jumps around a lot of different issues. And then I am happy to talk about any other issues you want to bring up. So this is the quick summary of the topics we were asked to come back and address. And we'll walk through them, but the issues were we had a summary of the impact of the changes to affordable housing. We were asked about parks and transportation. We have that. There was some questions about the history of our Block 33 transaction in North McAdam, so we can bring some information on that. There was also some questions about both previous expenditures in Central East Side as well as the request from the Brooklyn Neighborhood Association on their request to be included in the expansion area. And then lastly, there was some questions both specific around things like the post office, but more general about the level of our budget and the projects in the River District. And I guess the general question was, are these all necessary or do we need to have funds allocated for these projects? So taking these one by one, this is a consolidated chart to talk about the impacts of the changes in expenditures to parks and transportation with respect to the full package of urban renewal amendments. The big picture here on this is the education urban renewal area was very specific around, obviously, the set-aside. It was specific around payments to the county as a result of the impact of urban renewal on the county's budget, as well as a handful of buckets of expenditures related to investments around the PSU campus. It was not as specific to transportation and parks expenditures as you would have seen in other urban renewal areas. So the net effect is that this is net positive, obviously, to both parks and transportation. And that the top line is just a summary of the overall numbers. So it's not, you know, parks and infrastructure start below that top line. There's a net reduction, as was the intent of the overall package, of over $76 million in non-housing related TIF. But when you go into parks and infrastructure, we've been able to, through the expansions proposed in North McAdam and Central East Side in particular, actually fill out a number of the line items related to parks and transportation. So you do see increases in both of these categories in both urban renewal areas. And then as a result of the contingency that's left at the end of North McAdam that is unprogrammed, but we presume that the direction of council after the set-aside would be to think about additional parks and transportation expenditures, there's a net increase of over $16 million to those two categories. I can walk through any of the actual line items, but that's the net effect of this. And like I said, it largely is because there wasn't much programmed in the high level summary of the forecast for the education or renewal area within parks and transportation. So now moving on to the summary of the North McAdam Block 33, and without getting into all the details here, people can read these, but Block 33, super block, so it's basically two city blocks, very very large block in the kind of central district of South Waterfront that was purchased by OHSU. So it's an OHSU property. And then around, you see the timeline in 2006, PDC acquired air rights, so not the land, but the rights to develop above a future garage for affordable housing. And so we paid essentially $6 million at that time for that. $3 million was a prepayment on parking in the garage to be built, and then the other $3 million was the payment for the air rights on that. The agreement also stipulated that when OHSU broke ground on that property, and once again, it's a super block, so that's a pretty massive project that would have happened on there, that they would have built a garage that would serve as a development platform for two buildings. One would be an affordable housing tower. The other would be the OHSU administrative offices, and that we would then at that time have to contribute our share of that garage, which was estimated to be $4 million. Once again, we paid the money up front for the air rights. Some of it was a prepayment, but we would have to have paid an additional $4 million to build this parking structure. In 2010, both OHSU and PDC in the middle of recession realized that this not going to happen. We were not going to move forward with the project as envisioned, and so we both set out to unwind the transaction. Had OHSU broken ground, we would not have had $4 million to put into the garage. So we unwound the transaction, and you can see here OHSU repaid to us $3 million. That was the prepayment on our rights to parking. They also paid us $1 million in transportation SDC credits, which we've been slowly selling off and getting the cash. And then we have another $2 million remaining in the property should OHSU develop it. And so that money is now has come back to us, and it is replenishing the set aside. So when it comes back to us, it's as if it was never spent. So we are it doesn't count permanently against the set aside.
But we would get that $2 million back.
It's contingent on the sale of that property, so it would be built into the whatever OHSU makes on the increase in value of the property. They would share with us $2 million to make us whole on that property.
And is there a time limit on that?
You can see it's in the next 7 years. I don't know if we have, I can get back to you on whether or not there's a requirement that they sell it at any point in time, but we can give you that answer on that.
And you said it does not count towards the set aside, that $2
million? As it's been paid back, it doesn't count towards the set aside. So we're assuming eventually that money will come back to us, and so it would not count against the set aside. The last thing, which I think you all have a copy of, if not, we make sure. But at the time, obviously the PHB PDC split had occurred, and so we went to PHB and asked for their consent on this transaction. And there's a letter that Margaret Van Vliet wrote in response to this, saying that PHB agreed that this was the best move for all, that PHB wouldn't really have any intent of building such a building and incurring this kind of expense on this kind of project. Next one, jumping back to Central East Side, there was a question about whether we had considered closing out the Central East Side urban renewal area and creating a new urban renewal area to make an investment in the Clinton Triangle. And so, once again, a lot of numbers on this. The on the left side, you have the current scenario in which we're able to unlock $32 million from both the expansion and extension of the urban renewal area. To generate that amount of resources would require, obviously, another 30-year time horizon of a new urban renewal area, and would require the creation of an urban renewal area much bigger than the triangle. So we still would need to look at an area that would capture about $125 million in assessed value. So that'd be a substantial geographic area just to get access to the same resources. And then the other point to make on this is that the resources would not come online – once, you know, as is the case with most new or renewal areas for quite a while. So we would not have access to $32 million in any of the time frame that we think makes sense for the redevelopment of the area around the Clinton Triangle. So, we've had different conversations with you over the past couple of years as we've looked at this. We looked at a number of different scenarios as to how to accomplish these objectives, and then Commissioner Novick was particularly interested in a variety of scenarios. We ran a lot of different scenarios on new versus existing or renewal areas, and so we were quite familiar with these dynamics. The extension of an existing or renewal area presents the best opportunity to access resources in the near term to get projects done now. New urban renewal areas really are designed to accomplish long-term objectives that don't require an immediate investment in projects, and that's really the trade-off that we're making here with this urban renewal area package. There were questions about investments in the Central East Side outside of the categories we were talking about, and we wanted to remind people about the history of expenditures since 98. You can see the breakdown here. In addition to the property redevelopment investments, we have made significant investments in open space. It's really the Esplanade. So the Esplanade was funded out of this urban renewal area and with tax increment. And then, of course, the streetcar was funded in part from tax increment here. We've had, as relative to other renewal areas, significantly less investment in this urban renewal area in loans to businesses, affordable housing, and you can see other types of community development, kind of smaller grant activity that we do, particularly in our neighborhood urban renewal areas. Central East Side Industrial Council has been very, very clear in expressing desire to make investments in growing the business base within this urban renewal area, given what they believe has been a front-loaded investment in things like parks, like the Esplanade and the streetcar. Moving on to the request from the Brooklyn Neighborhood Association. Obviously, there were a lot of different scenarios considered in how we were to expand any of the renewal areas. On the Central East Side, we looked at a number of different iterations. So there's no right and wrong. The major logic, which we talked about last time, in which the steering committee that met on this, they came to the same conclusion, is that the addition of a geography of this size, and you can see its size on this map relative to the expansion area as proposed, would significantly dilute the limited resources that are going to be created through this amendment. And you know, it's not that there aren't worthy investments to be made along the corridors highlighted in yellow. It's just it really does stretch limited dollars, and there is a strong priority in supporting development along the light rail line and keeping it as close to the current boundary of the Central East Side as possible. So that's why this would this part of the scenario was rejected. And in addition, the expansion area, this additional expansion area, would also dilute some of the other planned expenditures that were being proposed for the core part of the legacy part of the district. And then lastly, I just want to kind of highlight some of the priorities that still remain in the River District. As city commissioners, I think we have conversations about these projects all the time. Sometimes it's helpful to remind people who don't hear about these projects that they still are queued up and remain priorities. These are kind of four of the major categories, but just last year, the city council passed the Old Town Chinatown Action Plan. Through that plan, we committed to $52 million over 5 years in investments in redevelopment activity and other activities to support the development of the neighborhood. We have part of that money allocated for seismic assessments and hopefully work to do seismic improvements on buildings. We have the hope of improving the parking infrastructure within the neighborhood. We view that as a commitment. Council passed that, and so we view that as a commitment. The next one, Centennial Mills, there's been a lot said previously here about Centennial Mills. I won't go into it, but it remains, and it's a property that we own and that we have an obligation to address in some form or fashion. It will have a cost to it no matter what. Whether it's $20 million or slightly less than $20 million or more than $20 million, we're actually actively in the process of scoping that out. We are scoping out the cost of selective demolition as we speak. So if it comes in and it's less than that and there's a way to not do anything else, which I, once again, I think it's premature to talk about that, that would obviously be money freed up for other things. Right now we're taking a somewhat conservative approach and saying $20 million needs to be remain in our budget for Centennial Mills. You were leaning in there, Commissioner Novick.
You said that it might. You're trying to determine how much less it might cost if we simply do demolition and make it safe. So you wanted to ask what that might be, and you said you're analyzing that.
Yeah,
so you're not. We don't know yet how cheap this could actually be.
Right, and then we also don't know what if you were. I don't want to. This isn't about Centennial Mills here, but if we were to totally demolish that site, and that's not the current plan, but if we were and we're left with would be a hole because it's all below street level, what else we need to do as well. So there's a lot of unknowns in determining whether 20 is too much, too little, or the right amount. Union Station, of course, we still have an uncertain path to completing the rehabilitation of the station. It's obviously not a structurally sound facility with regard to seismic events. So it needs a substantial upgrade. The dollar amounts required are significantly more than $9 million, but our history to date has been to access federal money and use our money to leverage federal money, and so we need to have match, but we have $9 million allocated for that. And then last but not least, the post office. There was specific reference made to the post office and whether or not the transaction that we have contemplated for the post office requires us to maintain any money in the budget at all, and I'll just state it does. The number's big, but it's just like any other transaction. If we are able to go in and buy that property, we would need to hold it, do all sorts of things, master plan it, do the proper way of soliciting interest in the property, making sure that the needs of the community are met. So whether there's additional open space requirements, affordable housing requirements, there's rights of way that need to be developed. So it will not be flipped, which was what was characterized here in the last hearing we had. It will be either money, in the best scenario, money that we invest and get back out, but it still take a few years, or in the worst case scenario, it's money that we put in and don't get out, but we get a new district that adds significantly to the community, and that's also part of the role that our money plays.
Once we sell it, what happens to the money?
The money would come back into the district, and the way our districts currently operate, it's money that can be used for additional projects, so it increases the resources available. But decisions could be made at that time as to what happens with it if it needs to retire debt or some other purpose. So it doesn't automatically have to go into new projects. But, once again, the number on here, right, this is a big number. Relative to other projects, if I have a $1 million piece of property and we sell it and get $1 million back, the current practice is to put that million back into the community. It's treated as TIF, so it goes back in as TIF into another project or into five projects. And so we treat it as resources that are available for future investment.
Okay, Patrick, but suppose we spent $35 million and got $45 million back. Would we have to spend it in the district, or could we at that point close the district and say that $45 million goes back to the various taxing jurisdictions?
So that's kind of an incomplete scenario, if you will. We've talked about this enough, so you know that there's always complexities to this answer. The ability to shut down the district depends on how much debt we have outstanding and our ability to repay that debt and whether the bonds are due. And so those are all the considerations. The $10 million above what we paid alone is not going to shut down the district, but
actually,
yes.
I mean, no matter when we shut down, if at some point we shut down the district and we have X million left over, does it get redistributed? Can we redistribute it to the taxing jurisdiction?
I think it's unclear right now where those resources go, whether they're redistributed, whether they retire debt, and whether they return to the city. So we can get you a more definitive answer from, I actually would go to our bond council on that one, because I think it's uncharted waters, I would say.
Are we expected to acquire the site from the Postal Service and then to pay for their relocation also? Is that part and parcel of what
we're
thinking?
The principle all along with the post office, or at least in the most recent kind of iteration of this deal, is that they will they would have an interest in selling their site to us if they can move into a new facility without additional cost. So the trick is do those values match up? So that's where we're at right now in terms of our conversations with them. So it's not an addition to, so we're not buying it and paying for them to relocate. They simply want to be able, if they're going to vacate that site, which is a functional site for them right now, they would need a comparable site, and they would have to have no money out of pocket. Otherwise, they would just stay where their current operation. So that's the balancing act that we're working on right now with them. But you know, I would say we think it's possible. We think it's possible to achieve both of those outcomes.
Other questions for Patrick? Okay, then stand by, because I think
we're all done with the presentation.
Unless you have questions.
So I do have another some more questions about the Central East Side District, and I'm wondering why the TriMet tracks are included in the expansion area.
You did ask that question. I might have to call somebody up who was. It's just the way it was drawn. There's no investment attached to the tracks. It could be drawn out. I mean, we've done that in the past, if that's what you're asking. But it isn't meant to imply that we're going to make an investment, or we've made an investment in those tracks. The investment we made was on the North McAdam side. Is that what you're asking? I'm sorry.
No, for the Central East side.
Yeah. So on the Central East side, I think it was drawn. It's just been drawn in a basic
right
kind of triangle. It hasn't tried to exclude anything in between, in the middle.
So the proposal is to add 16.23 acres, but 8.72 of that is right of way. I understand why Powell needs to be in there, but I don't understand why the TriMet tracks are in there, because that, what I'm hearing you say is we're not planning to do any kind of improvements there.
Yeah, and I don't know where the eight acres comes from. I don't know how much of the right of way is still developable. So some of the right of way that was acquired by TriMet, and Jillian Detweiler probably knows better than I do, is actually developable. So they relocated businesses, and so there's a buffer there that's still developable that TriMet actually owns, that has development potential. So I don't know how much of the eight includes that. The actual tracks themselves, yes, there's no planned investment, and we could look at what that encompasses.
Yeah, so perhaps before the next hearing, I'd like to get that information, because it makes it appear that the expansion is 16 plus acres, and it looks to me like at least half of that is TriMet tracks and right-of-way. So then it comes down to there's only 7.5 acres of actual developable lots, and the question is, the next question is, have we yet determined how much of the Fire Bureau property maybe co-owned or was purchased with Water Bureau money?
I think we know that. It's the question. So we have the next questions are, what's the value of the water property relative to the rest of the site? It's a very complicated land ownership. And so it now comes down to the valuation. So if you talk about how to properly dispose of the Water Bureau property and make sure that ratepayers are made whole, we have to determine the value of that piece of the property, and we're not there yet, and it's interlocking.
Patrick, right? So, some of the wealthiest people in New York City are people that bought fractional interests of land and then sold them for an astronomical amount of money, because you couldn't build the high-rise without their five square foot. So we're certainly willing to sell for a reasonable price. We think we're in a strong position.
We're well aware of the disposition procedures that have been put in place, and we obviously are going to work with the commissioner's office to work within those boundaries on that part of it as well.
So I would like to have some more of that information as soon as possible. If we've only got $20 million and a maybe a large part of that is owed to the ratepayers and is not available for investment in the triangle, it becomes even more questionable whether we should invest in the Stacy and Whitbreck 3.37 acres. The Fire Bureau's got 3.32. There's only four other very small landowners. The majority of that site is city. And so it's important to know how much is the Fire Bureau's and how much is going to go back to the ratepayers.
Yeah, so we can get you the information. The proposed investment in the triangle is really infrastructure to create developable parcels. It's not necessarily to acquire the properties. It's to make them developable so that someone can come in and acquire those properties. So there's utilities that run underground. There's street infrastructure that needs to be addressed, and there's the stuff on Powell that needs to be addressed. So that's the bulk of the investment isn't around acquiring properties. It's around putting the infrastructure in for development.
Yeah, but why would we then? Who then benefits from the development?
Well, first off, if we're improving this, the value of publicly owned land, the sale would benefit both taxpayers, ratepayers. But that's also the same question that we're having about what are the community benefits for our development. And we've talked about affordable housing. We've talked about other things. So I still think that's a conversation to happen. But there would be community benefit expectations around anybody who acquired that site and benefited from the infrastructure investments.
And since there is just one other major landowner other than...
And Commissioner Saltzman has, he's already put out the covenant around affordable housing, right? So that...
Yeah, I think as I shared with all of you after our last hearing that, if the Fire Bureau property does transfer, then I intend to make sure there's a covenant, a deed restriction that requires that affordable housing be developed on that Fire Bureau property.
And are you going to be able to do that within the next 2 weeks to put that deed restriction on?
I'm happy to come up with some language, I guess.
We're nowhere near being able to sell.
Yeah,
might not be the commissioner in charge of fire at the point that it's...
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
But we're nowhere near being able ready to sell.
Yeah, procedurally, all these things would come back to council. So selling property comes back to council. Development agreement on that property comes back to council. I mean, all these things would come back to council for separate approval.
Well, comparing the specificity that Commissioner Fish has been valiantly working on in North McAdam and that I and Commissioner Novick are hoping to look at with the Zidell property, has there been any discussion with Stacy and Whitbeck about future of a development agreement for their property?
There's been plenty of conversation. We've had actually collective master planning conversations. I don't believe we've crossed over to the stage of a development agreement, but they've been part of our conversations around what development is possible in that full triangle. I don't know if you want to...
And in the information that you've given us, there's some breakout about how much might go to affordable housing, how much might go to transportation infrastructure, et cetera, off the $20 million. If part of that money needs to be given to ratepayers, that's less than $20 million. So can you come back with a greater specificity on how much... really we're going to have to invest in that triangle?
I can come back with scenarios. Once again, I'm not convinced that we're going to be buying the Water Bureau property. So we could make the investments for the infrastructure, and then we have development parcels that can then be put out and sold, and ratepayers are made whole through the sale. Our normal process wouldn't have us having this figured out at this moment, but as we've thought through development scenarios, there's a scenario in which it's better for us to acquire it and then complete the parcels and sell it, and then there's also scenarios in which we allow it to be sold. But either way, our intent is to get full value for those parcels so that it's a net, at least a net zero to us on the land. We believe that what's missing, because the utilities that run into the site are significant enough that no private investment is going to take care of that. So that's what we feel is the most necessary piece for us in that part of the district. We have other investments elsewhere on the central east side that are in that list, but this is particular to the infrastructure utilities in this triangle.
Right, and it just seems to me that we're proposing to spend at least $10 million on the infrastructure, which then will benefit a private party as well as the Fire Bureau and the Water Bureau, and we should have more certainty that we're going to get some payback from that private party.
We're nowhere near proposing the expenditures. I mean, they have a list, as they do in each of these districts, of potential expenditures. But properties zoned industrial, occupied by a fire bureau maintenance facility, and has a giant sewer under it. There's so much work to do before we know what the development scenario is that, you know, we can ask Patrick to supply this information, but it's still all entirely speculative, right?
Yeah.
We have no idea what's going to be developed there or when.
And I think that it's probably room to have the intent expressed now about there being affordable housing and other outcomes. I mean, that we have to make sure that we can still track the development to make these things happen. But I think that's appropriate as outcomes. But, yeah, I don't know that we can get into project specifics in this triangle given all the unknowns. I think that's where we're at. And like I said, our goal is not to be in an ownership position of the Water Bureau site or the Fire Bureau site. Our goal is to...
It's a little bit like the situation in the Pearl District when at this stage of the process, we knew we needed to take down the Lovejoy ramp. And we knew we couldn't have development there until we took down the Lovejoy ramp and built streets because it didn't have any. And to try to see around the corner to exactly what kind of building was going to be on the block that was then occupied by the Lovejoy ramp would have been no more predictive of reality than trying to predict exactly what's going to be built on the Fire Bureau property.
No, and that's, with all due respect, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, in the Pearl District, we had a development agreement, or we're moving towards it, with Hoyt Street Properties.
Right.
In the North McAdam, we had talked with OHSU. We knew who the major landowners were, and we had a framework for an agreement. I'm not hearing that we have that with Stacey and Whitbeck.
And we absolutely don't, nor do we have one with ourselves or the other big property owner.
Yeah, I'm less worried about ourselves because we are for the public purpose and we are investing public money around public properties. I'm concerned about moving forward with a major expansion which sends the timeline out to 2051 for the payback to the taxing jurisdictions without knowing what the public benefit is on the Stacey and Whitbeck property.
And you think we need to know that before we expand the urban renewal area in every case?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting theory.
I just kind of put a clarification. I was just checking on that the bonds under the current scenario, the debt will be paid off essentially side by 2030. So the calculations that are being tossed around on 2051 relate to the payback for how long, but the district ends, the debt is paid off in 2030. So that's,
but the payback is still 2051 if we extend it.
The payback, if you're saying how much was foregone and when do we make up for in tax revenues, but the debt's not outstanding until 2051.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Mayor, is this a good time to talk about timeline and next steps, or do you want to hold
Well, at first, it's a good time to talk about amendments because I think there are some. And then it's my intention to take action on any proposed amendments today and then to set this package for second reading on the 25th. So that was our intention for today. So we were now going to open the floor to amendments on any of these items that council members want to bring forward.
Well, I would, if it's appropriate, I would offer an amendment that says, upon the transfer of any Fire Bureau land in the Clinton Triangle, an affordable housing covenant be recorded against the deed. So that removes the issue of who's the fire commissioner at the time if we put it in right now.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any further discussion on that? So let's take a roll call on accepting that amendment. And that's to, sorry, we got to make sure we're talking about the right one. That is to 268,
right.
So, Mayor, that Dan had previously circulated that his intention to do that. Since you're the sponsor of the package, do you have a position on it?
I'm comfortable with that amendment.
Okay.
And Mayor, your intent is that we will vote on any proposed amendments and take testimony prior to?
I don't believe we can take testimony on amendments, but let's hear what you have to say about that.
Before we get to that, I think we have some potentially confusion about framing. Should we vote on this and come back to the timeline?
Let's vote on accepting the amendment first.
Fritz?
I don't usually vote without knowing what the vote means, but I appreciate the amendment. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay.
So, Mayor, in terms of the what we're our timeline here, so as you and I have discussed, there are a host of issues that first of all, there are a number of ordinances which I'd be prepared to vote on today or next week because I think they're now non-controversial. I understand from your office you'd prefer to have the whole thing taken up as a package.
That's right. So, this is the first comprehensive reform of urban renewal in the history of urban renewal, and I'd like to go big or go home, and therefore I'd like to do this as a package.
So that I respect that, but I just want to be clear. There's items here I'd be prepared to vote today or next week. The 2 week interval was intended to address a number of issues which I have raised with my colleagues in writing at execs and then privately. I want to just be very clear. With the follow-up discussions with PDC and PHB that have been terrific to work with the Housing Commissioner, your office, Mayor, it's been great to work with, and my colleagues, I may very well have an amendment to offer. So I appreciate the two additional weeks. What I can't say today is that I won't be bringing forth an amendment in 2 weeks. So with that understanding and reserving the right to bring amendments, I'm comfortable with the two-week set over.
Okay. Other amendments to other items on the docket?
Yes, Mayor. I have a small amendment to the North McAdam item, which I freely admit might not even draw a second. It's meant to be a compromise on a certain issue which might not satisfy anyone other than Patrick Quinton and myself. In Exhibit B, report accompanying the Fourth Amendment to the North McAdam Urban Renewal Plan, I'm going to pass out, by the way, both the amendment and a strike through that shows that it would be replacing. What it currently says is that, among other things, $44.5 million is set aside for commercial, or not set, anticipated for commercial redevelopment loans and grants, $7 million for infrastructure / open space, and $2 million for target industries. And I was rather inclined to take some of the money currently slotted for commercial redevelopment loans and grants and target industries and reallocate it to infrastructure / open space. And I suggested that. Patrick wasn't too excited about that, but he was comfortable with the idea of saying that we should have one overarching category of infrastructure open space redevelopment totaling $13.5 million, given that at this point PDC doesn't know what kind of commercial loans or targeting it might do, and I can't say for certain exactly how much I would be planning to insist on for transportation. So this amendment would postpone the debate over how that $13.5 million is allocated to another time, in effect.
Well, I, in both for its own sake and to help out Patrick Quinton, I'll second your amendment. Further discussion of Commissioner Novick's proposal?
Mayor, do you intend to support this?
I do.
Okay. Could I get a clarification on whether we are taking any testimony on amendments?
The question is about public testimony?
Yeah.
If you look at the code says that public testimony shall only be taken on the first reading of an ordinance. So my understanding is that the first reading was a couple weeks ago of all of these, that the public hearing or testimony portion was closed. So I don't believe there should be any public testimony today.
I'm always happy to take public testimony, but if that's what he thinks, then I don't think we should.
The challenge is I haven't seen this amendment prior to 2 minutes ago, so I haven't had any opportunity to discuss it with my bureau directors or my staff. And I would like to hear from the public as to whether they think it's a good suggestion or not.
Well, can I just ask a question of the sponsor? What it looks like you're doing is just putting a new header and just aggregating dollars. Is that correct?
Exactly.
You're not actually prioritizing how that money will be spent within the category. You're just putting a new header and then lumping the money together.
Mm. Quite so.
And here's why I support that, at the risk of sounding a little pedantic, and also referring back to the last discussion. Please look at the label at the top of the graph. It's estimated project expenditures. This is not a budget. This is an estimate. Urban renewal areas are a box on the map in which we sequester new tax value and do things with the money. Two things have to happen for that money to be real. Assessed values have to go up and people have to build things. This is an estimate, not a budget, because we don't know how much development activity is going to happen in this district or any other. So I think, frankly, the council has become has taken a very detailed interest in spreadsheets that are estimates as if they were budgets, my opinion. I think they are what they say they are, which is estimates.
So can I ask, Patrick, can I ask you a question on this? Because I haven't seen this either. Does this amendment in any way either decide the question or tilt the field about how money might be spent as between the two priorities of open space and infrastructure? Does this substantively change the flexibility
It changes the flexibility, but doesn't tilt it in one way or the other. It as the mayor just pointed out, it puts the question off. And you know, we still will go through a budget every year, and we go through, as you know from our budget, we come to a budget, you actually vote on the upcoming fiscal year budget, and we present you with 5-year forecast. So there are multiple looks at our budget year after year after year, both the current year and down. So my guess is, should something come up 2 years from now and it's something we're proposing or someone else is proposing out of this line item, it would then be broken out of this as a budget line item and say park, or it'll say a street, or it'll be some redevelopment project, and then you'll get a chance to vote on at that point.
So we're not moving money from one proposed pocket to another. We're just sort of lumping money under a new category.
Yeah, and remember, the conversation started because whether we had it characterized properly or not, we had money allocated in the report that we sent that said it was, I think, open space or something or whatever. It was, right, and so people were saying, why is it open space? Why isn't transportation? So I think this is a way to say we're not trying to decide that today. We're leaving it open that we're going to use it to the best way at the time to achieve the outcomes of the district.
Commissioner Novick, is that consistent with your understanding as the author?
Pretty close. Although the mayor's perfectly right, these are estimates. These are not budgets, but I was paranoid about the presumption that $6.5 million would go to commercial redevelopment loans and target industries, leaving $7 million to be divided between infrastructure and parks. So I was inclined to say that infrastructure and parks, we should say up front, should get more than that. Patrick wasn't excited about that, particularly given the preliminary and the nature of all of this, but he was comfortable with the idea of having one catch-all category. And my assumption is that without that presumption that about half of that $13 million would go to commercial redevelopment loans and target industries, in the future, I might have a fighting chance to get more than half of $7 million out of that $13 million pot.
Well, and I think I've also heard him say that also on an annual basis is at the discretion of the council whether it approves the budget, and it includes each URA.
Yeah, and you know, just as the mayor said, part of my job is maybe to remind everybody that there has to be tax increment generating projects. So that was also the reason why I pushed back when Commissioner Novick recommended that was, it could be very well be that that money could be spent on other things. So we just want to leave out the possibility that we need to help the taxable projects in the district in addition to doing the infrastructure and open space. So that's why we had that bucket. This still allows us to do that. And it could be that a street is the best thing that we can put money into, or a park is the best thing we can put money into to generate taxable development. So it does leave open that for you know, when we actually have opportunities in front of us.
So Commissioner Novick, why did you not also add the $8.3 million for the Southwest Bond design, engineering, and construction? Because it seems to me that's still a question as to whether that's the more appropriate transportation priority than, say, the South Portal.
I think that bond is a high priority for OHSU and also to handle additional bicycle traffic in particular that we expect to have after the Telequin crossing is built. So I was comfortable with the idea of leaving bond as something we assume we're going to invest in, and hoping that for the South Portal we might get some other resources. But also, I mean, the intent is to give us a chance to fight for a bigger share of that $13.5 million for the South Portal at some point in the future.
Yeah, the challenge, of course, being that there's not enough money for parks and transportation in the entire district. So if we're looking at transportation as a whole, that $8.3 million for bond, I think, should be still under discussion.
I disagree with that. Again, someone who was involved in creating this district, the point of this district was to enable Oregon Health and Sciences University to remain in the city of Portland instead of building an expansion campus in Hillsboro. It seems like ancient history now, but that's why we did this and built an aerial tram and extended the streetcar. And Southwest Bond is essential to carrying out the street grid map that Vic Rhodes and I drew on a piece of paper hastily, but fast enough to keep someone from building a gated community on the south waterfront, and to enable Joe Robertson and his predecessors to make the commitment that they've made to expanding our largest health institution there. So I don't think there should be any wobbling by this council on our commitment to OHSU to be true to our part of this very large joint venture.
I think we've been more than fair to OHSU, considering the tram was going to cost $9 million when it started and ended up costing $57 million of taxpayers' money of tax increment. So to come back to OHSU at this point and say, could they, as they're doing their billion-dollar Knight Cancer Institute, perhaps pay a little more of the street infrastructure needed to support their campus, seems reasonable to me.
Well, I'll let you have that conversation with President Robertson.
Happy to.
Mayor, I will be filing a public records request for that napkin.
it's a heck of a napkin.
Make it sure it's part of the record here. I think that's been a good discussion. I'm going to support the amendment, so I would move the vote.
Further discussion? Roll call.
I just wanted to announce that I'm recusing myself from any discussion on North McAdam due to a potential conflict of interest.
Understood.
Fritz.
So the problem remains that there's not enough money without the Zidell development agreement to do all of the things that need to be done to make this a great district. That said, I appreciate Commissioner Novick's amendment. It does potentially put some money out of redevelopment loans and grants and put it into parks and open space. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Novick.
Thank you, colleagues. Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay.
Mayor, we can clean this up after, but the 10A is a table that summarizes 10B.
Apologies. I meant to ask the PDC restructure 10B.
So we'll restructure 10B based on these instructions. Okay, thanks.
Duly noted. All right. Okay, any further amendments? Okay, now again, normally I would love to take public testimony, but you don't believe that we should. So unless there's any further amendments, then I'm going to set these all for second reading on March 25th for the regular council calendar.
So again, Mayor, just reserving my right to bring amendments on that date. So
right. And if people want to bring amendments on that date, I would recommend that we also consider at that time adding the emergency clause to anything that's amended, just so that the package can be adopted this month as we plan. Okay, so we can
Excuse
do
me.
That then if that's the council's pleasure.
Commissioner Fish, you're absent on the 25th.
Oops. All right. Then we probably don't want to let...
25th and the 26th.
How about the... Oh, you're gone the 26th as well?
Well, I can... I could appear by telephone, couldn't I?
Teleconference, sure.
I'm happy to do that.
Okay. Which day would be better?
Whatever your pleasure, Mayor.
I was going to put it on the regular council calendar for Wednesday morning, so...
Can we do a time certain?
Sure. Let's do a time certain, maybe 11 o'clock or something.
That would be it, 11 o'clock.
At work?
Fine.
Okay, 11 a.m., March 25th, and we're adjourned, and we have a budget session. Oh, we've got to return. No, we're not adjourned. Never mind. We've got to go back to 267.